Julio Claudian soap opera, part 3. This one is Tiberius, the, shall we say, the discussion about what happens when Tiberius dies. And unlike the long, drawn-out, confusing mess that we had with Augustus, there really aren't a lot of choices for Tiberius to select as an heir. Now, when he came to the throne in 14 A.D., as emperor, and he will be emperor for 23 years. Really embittered by his treatment. He didn't like Rome. He'll spend as much time as he possibly can away from Rome. And, of course, he's saddled by probably the greatest of all problems for a politician. Here is a guy who will be good for the empire and good for Rome, but he's not Augustus. And everybody's always saying, well, you're not Augustus, and you're not Augustus. And it just drove him nuts. Now, of the choices that we have, the person who was chosen actually to replace him first, the first choice, is Germanicus. Germanicus was adopted by Tiberius over his own son, Julius Caesar Drusus, mainly because Germanicus has a better family background going back all the way through back to Julius Caesar, because he is the son of Antonia the Younger and Tiberius's brother Drusus. But Antonia the Younger was Mark Antony's daughter by Octavian's sister Octavia. Okay, so actually he gets primacy, and you can imagine that might be pretty disgusting for you to have to pick somebody over your own son. The second choice, if something happened to Germanicus, would be, of course, Tiberius' son by his first wife, Vipsania. Usually you'll see that they'll put the word Drusus, and sometimes you'll see J.C. Drusus. J.C. stands for Julius Caesar Drusus. And then beyond that, you would end up with children of the individuals. For example, Drusus has a son by his wife, who's called Gemellus, and then you would have Germanicus's children, Nero, Drusus, and several of his other sons that would fall into that category. What's unusual here is that we're going to have a wild card come in and cause problems. And that is going to be the commander of the Praetorian Guard under Tiberius, which is Lucius Aelius Sejanus. And so we're actually going to have somebody who's going to try and come in here and wiggle their way in the position. Well, let's start rubbing people out here. In Germanicus's case, he's adopted, as I said before, by Tiberius in 4 A.D., and he is, of course, one of the top generals. He has been successful everywhere he has gone. He had actually had the audacity when he's in Palestine to go to Egypt. Now, Egypt is a emperor's province, and no one is allowed in there without the emperor's permission. Germanicus went on his own to see what this was like, and caused all sorts of problems with Tiberius. Tiberius was very frustrated with him. And there is discussion that Tiberius made some statements that, you know, maybe this guy's driving me nuts, we need to be gotten rid of, etc. and so on. And at any rate, Germanicus is going to die in 19 AD as a result of probably being poisoned. And there is a big stink over this because the family, Germanicus's wife, Agrippina the Elder, accuses Calpurnius Piso, one of Tiberius's close political associates, with poisoning him. Now, there's really not much doubt that he was poisoned, for heaven's sakes. He had blotches all over his skin, and any good Roman knew that was belladonna. There is indications that the poison may have actually been delivered by one of his children, Gaius Caligula, because Caligula never forgave his father for not taking him in to Egypt. But that's something that you find in Suetonius, that there's all sorts of little things that happen. At any rate, with the death of Germanicus, we have some really ugly things taking place, because Germanicus's wife is just absolutely ballistic over this and becomes a real agitator against Tiberius, actually accuses him of murdering her husband, and does a lot of agitation. Well, that obviously clears the way for Drusus here to come in to be the next individual. Drusus, unfortunately, Julius Caesar Drusus, is not going to last much longer either. He'll last 9 more years. He dies in 23 A.D. And he's poisoned by his wife. Livia Julia, which is Germanicus's sister. And she was having an affair with the commander of the Praetorian Guard, which was Sejanus. And no question about that, that she poisoned Drusus. So now that knocks the two main contenders completely out. Now we're left with just kids. The next thing that comes into play is, of course, Tiberius is going to spend a lot of time at his palace on the Isle of Capri. And there's also a spot there, I think it's called Tiberius's Leap, where every once in a while somebody he disliked, he would toss off. Now, Capri has always been one of his favorite palaces. He frequently went there and did all sorts of strange things. He had young boys. Tiberius is pretty much what I refer to as a trisexual. He did pretty much anything he felt like. And Capri was really kind of his pleasure palace, if you will. The story goes by Suetonius that Tiberius also collected pornographic scrolls, which I guess is the playboy of the ancient world. But it was an interesting place. So when he is gone at Capri, the person who is in charge in Rome is the commander of the Praetorian Guard. Now, the Praetorian Guard was put into place by the Emperor Augustus. It's the only allowed military force in Rome, in that particular area, for protection of the emperor and whatever else. Unfortunately, Sejanus has an interest in getting his own political power. And if you look at it from his point of view, there are just a couple of children of Germanicus that are in the way. There's the young son of Drusus in the way, and then of course there's Germanicus's brother, which is Claudius, but Claudius is considered to be an idiot because he limps, twitches, and stutters. So it looks like you could clean house here pretty quickly. So once he gets into power, the first thing he's able to do is to get rid of Agrippina. Now, that's Germanicus's wife. She is accused of plotting to take over the government. Of course, she's been very violently against Tiberius, so that one's pretty easy to sell. Her son, Agrippina's son Nero, is forced to commit suicide, and her second son Drusus was starved to death, also for treason. And upon hearing that her two oldest children had been, what she referred to, murdered, she then committed suicide herself. So that gets rid of that particular little group. Now you're down to little young Gaius, we'll refer to as Caligula later on, and Gemellus, and we're home free. And all this occurs really after you get to about 26 A.D., Sejanus begins to wield even more power. Unfortunately, Sejanus is being watched. Germanicus's mother, Antonia the Younger, has been keeping an eye on this. Is very much concerned because, you know, these are her grandchildren, great grandchildren, etc., and so on. And she's able to, with the help of Claudius and other people who are very much against the Janus seeing him as a usurper because he has no personal power. He doesn't. He has personal power because he owns the sword, but he doesn't have any hereditary claim. He's like a commoner taking over as far as it's concerned. The trouble is, how do we get all that information to Tiberius? He's at Capri. He's surrounded by Sejanus' guards. Sejanus has a great control of access in and out of the palace. So what they end up doing is they send messages with Claudius, who no one suspects of being anything but an idiot, and he's an older man, and then Gaius Caligula, who had been attending Capri's going-ons for a very long time, probably the youngest of the family going in there and enjoying the perversions, and he'll improve upon them, of course, as his once he becomes emperor. But they're able to bring in the documents showing Tiberius what is going on, and then he has to try and figure out how to get around it. So information is then sent out, and they begin looking for someone else to help. And one thing is true with the Imperial Guard, the Praetorian Guard, is there's always someone looking to become commander. And what they were able to find is an up-and-coming sub-commander who was willing to do the dirty work, a gentleman named Naevius Sertorius Macro. And then he is empowered by Tiberius to deal with Sejanus. And so you have the massacre of Sejanus' followers. This whole episode is referred to as the conspiracy of Sejanus. And there's this massacre that occurs in the city of Rome. I mean, you have he is killed, his wife is killed, I believe Claudius is married to one of his relatives, she is killed, the supporter of Sejanus are killed. There's this huge purging, which of course isn't exactly going to endear Tiberius anymore to the people, if you will. But as he aged, as Tiberius aged, he decided that what he was going to do, what he does is he selects co-rulers. He passed over Claudius, and obviously he's still considered to be kind of a stupid individual, but we're going to find out later on that he's playing everybody. And what he does is he selects his grandson, Gemellus, and Gaius Caligula to be co-rulers. And the people will go, what in the world are you doing? Because if you'd have somebody in the family, it becomes customary later on, for example, during the time of the five good emperors. Instead of picking somebody in their family, they would just pick someone who was qualified and do that adoption thing. And so that way they made sure they got somebody who was worthy. And he could have done that. But Tiberius had kind of an ulterior motive. What he wanted to do was he wanted to pick someone who he knew was going to be so bad that people, when they spoke of the time of the Emperor Tiberius, would look back and say, man, those were really good days. He was really a good emperor. And he does a pretty good job. Now, of course, we've got to let Tiberius die in a kind of unusual manner. He died on Capri. And it looked like he had expired. He's laying on the bed. There, Macro and Caligula and other people are talking about, now it's time to go on. This is what we're going to do. And as they're getting ready to leave the room, Tiberius suddenly sits up on the end of his bed, says he's hungry and thirsty. Everybody looks at each other, and then Macro made the decision for everyone. He went and got a pillow or what have you and strangled him to death or smothered him to death to make sure that the emperor really was dead this time. And then that leads us to the reign of the Emperor Caligula, which we'll be doing a little bit later on. On the Caligula one, there's not much discussion about succession here, so I'm going to give you a little background to some of the goofy things that he did. And then, you know, later on, months down the road, I'll go back and give you give you some background on what each of these early emperors did for Rome from a positive standpoint and some other stuff besides this stuff, this juicy gossip, if you will. Again, if you're looking for the sources for this, excellent stuff as Suetonius, the 12 Caesars, Michael Grant, the 12 Caesars, the Chronicle of the Roman Empire by Scarre. And I just picked up a new book, and it's not new out, but it was on sale at Barnes & Noble. I couldn't turn it down. It's another Michael Grant book, and it's Michael Grant on the ancient historians. And so he has a chapter on each one of the ancient historians, Suetonius, Livy, etc., and so on, you know, Thucydides, Herodotus, and gives historical background about them, talks about their personalities. Really good to find what the people were like at the time period. And don't forget, for those of you who are going, oh my God, this is so confusing, go to summahistorica.com, my website, and there is a relatively detailed Julio-Claudian genealogical chart there that you can use. Well, hope you enjoyed that, and we'll get Caligula the next time. Thank you.